Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the things that I'm happy to see is Joe Biden's talking about raising the minimum wage. Now they're talking about doing it as part of this this recovery package. Because look, Republicans aren't going to voluntarily go along, and you're never going to get past the 60 vote threshold. So the fact that they're going to tie it to the stimulus is probably the only way they're going to be able to get it through. And we need it. We desperately need an increase in the minimum wage. But we also need to do some other things. We need to do some smart stuff, close the tipped wage. We need to not have separate wages for people with disabilities. We need to have one fair wage. And here to share some thoughts on, well, how do we get to that place of having that one fair wage? I've asked Saru Yararaman to come talk with us. She's the president of One Fair Wage. She's also the director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. She's written a couple of books, Behind the Kitchen Door and Forked. I think I like that one the best. Forked, a new standard for American dining. Saru, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm looking at this this plan that Joe Biden's got to tie this minimum wage increase to this rescue package. I'm fully behind raising the wage. What do you say to the person who goes, we just can't afford it right now, we're in a pandemic?
Oh my gosh, we can't afford to do it right now. Not to do it right now, we're in a pandemic. As much as small business has been suffering throughout this pandemic, I think we have to understand that millions and millions and millions of people, workers, are suffering as much. And their suffering is not losing a business. It's losing their home, losing their ability to feed their children, losing the ability to pay rent or heating bills or electricity bills. Their suffering is not about losing a life dream or the business that they had or going into debt. It's honestly survival. And the only way that those millions of people are going to be able to come back and feed their children and consume and stimulate the economy and thus support small business that is struggling is to be paid actually a wage that allows them to survive, that allows them to feed their children, that allows them to consume. So it's really important to note that this COVID relief package that Biden has put forward includes $150 billion in small business relief, which is critical. But that small business relief will be a one-time infusion of cash into small businesses. What's really going to allow small businesses to survive the next year or two or three? It's their communities being able to afford to consume, to purchase, to shop, to eat out in those small businesses. And the only way people will have that consumption ability in America is if they are paid a wage that allows them to actually consume.
No, I'm right there with you. But what do you say? Again, I'm getting this from all kinds of people. Well, I make $13 an hour. And, am I going to get a big raise too? Am I going to get, and it all comes down to how people view their own situations. How do you see that playing up? My response has always been, we've raised the minimum wage before and the end of the world didn't happen. But we've got these people who keep throwing this idea that the end of the world is going to happen if we raise the wage to $15 over the next several years. They've just got it in their head that it's the end times.
And it's really amazingly successful. Misinformation campaigns that have been spread by corporate trade lobbies like the National Restaurant Association that somehow it is end times. But I think you only have to go to the states and cities that have already raised their wages. Many, many states and cities that have already raised their wages to $15 an hour. And not only have we not seen end times or job loss, we've seen exactly the opposite. So What I often talk about is the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers, which is still $2.13 at the federal level. These workers can be legally paid less because tips are supposed to bring them to the full minimum wage. There are 7 states that rejected that idea many decades ago. They're not all blue states: California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska. all require a full minimum wage with tips on top. And just like you're saying, when that happened, the Restaurant Association predicted end times. And for all other states where people have been advocating for a full minimum wage for tipped workers, the Restaurant Association predicted end times. But if you look at the seven states that have a full minimum wage with tips on top, and many of them are at $15 an hour already, they have actually higher restaurant industry sales per capita, higher small business growth in the restaurant industry, higher job growth overall, higher rates of tipping. Turns out people tip better when they're paid better. And guess what? Even those chains that are fighting hardest against this, the corporate large chains, they are growing faster in those seven states than in the 43 states with a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers. So not only does the data not show that it's end times or that businesses will be killed or jobs will be lost, the data in many ways shows the opposite, that when you pay people more, they're able to consume, and that is what allows small business to thrive.
No, and the last time the minimum wage, we got a minimum wage law passed in this country, was in July of 2009. We're talking, you know, almost 12 years ago, and the last time, 2007, the last time it was increased was 2009, and it went up to the current $7.25, and we're now almost 12 years at $7.25 an hour. And had we just had an adjustment for inflation, it would have gone up to, you know, somewhere around almost $9 an hour just to keep pace with inflation. So it's been eroded after more than a decade of not being increased, which is why, again, I hope that once Biden passes this, there's some kind of leveler in there that says, you know what, every year when inflation goes up a penny or two, we're going to give those raises and keep up, so we don't have to have this erosion after a decade. We don't have to have this kind of scenario that we're desperate to get something passed.
That's right. What we need is for the minimum wage to match actually not even just inflation, but average wage growth. Because as all other people's wages go up, often due to inflation, we need minimum wage workers also to go up. Otherwise, what we're doing is growing the huge income inequality in our country. People at the bottom are stagnating, and people at the middle are going up, which has hollowed out any kind of middle class. And again, I want to come back to the fact that what that does is it doesn't just hurt workers. It hurts the country's ability to consume. It hurts business when there is no middle class, there is no working class, because the lowest wage workers' work wages have stagnated relative to everybody else.
Yeah. Are we advocating, because, you know, this is one of the questions I get a lot, well, you know, I can't afford to pay $15 an hour right now. I think a lot of people believe that if the minimum wage is raised, it's going to be immediate. Whereas, you know, over the last several times we've raised the minimum wage, it's been a 3 or 4 year gradual process to get to to the end goal. So I want to lay some of the fears of people going, well, I can't do that right now. There's going to be a rollout and a way that this is going to increase over a couple years, right?
At least 5 years. 5 years to get to 15 for non-tipped workers, and 6 years to get to 15 for tipped workers. And since most states already are above the federal minimum wage, the truth is that in the first year, two, maybe even three, most people whose states have higher wages than the federal won't actually have to increase their wages at all, because, you know, the lowest wage states, the states that have an absolute lowest wage of $7.25, those are the states that need to start increasing right away. But most states are above $7.25, so they're not even going to have to increase anything in the first year or two. It is a gradual phase-in over 5 to 6 years. And, yes, it's been based on economists looking at what works in terms of wage increases. And they've seen that this works. And, again, it not only seen that it works, but it produces very successful outcomes in terms of business growth, job growth, and stimulus to the economy, which is bottom line what we need right now. We need to stimulate this heavily depressed economy.
No, you're right. Here in Pennsylvania, the minimum wage in our state is $7.15 an hour. We defer to the federal and get that extra, that whopping extra dime to get up to that $7.25.
Right.
But what do you see? A couple of times you've now said that most employers pay above that, most jobs are above that. And I know my conservative friends are going, but, you know, if that's the case, you know, why bother raising the federal minimum wage at all? If the states are already doing this, if we're already there, you know, why bother?
Well, we're clearly not already there if you in Pennsylvania are less than the federal minimum wage and tipped workers are at $2.83 an hour. There are far too many states that honestly don't even have a state minimum wage or have a state minimum wage that is equal to or just above $7 or $8. And then for tipped workers, 4 out of 5 states have wages of $5 or less. I mean, come on. Who can live on $2, $3, or $4 an hour, especially now when tips are down 50 to 75%? It is desperately overdue. You said it's been almost a decade since we've seen an increase, or more than a decade,
12 years.
An increase of overall minimum wage. It's been 31 years since tipped workers saw an increase. The last time the wage for tipped workers went up was 1991. Come on. It is long overdue. There are way too many states that don't pay more than $7.25 or $2.13 an hour. And what that does is it creates regional disparities. So businesses in some parts of the country are paying more. Businesses in some other parts of the country are paying less. And it exacerbates the divide between, again, the haves and the have-nots, the states that are doing better versus the states that are doing worse. The states that are pay more have more stimulated economies. The states that pay less have less stimulated economies. It creates for a lot of inequality between states. And it creates inequality between people in different sectors. So what we really need is a floor, a reasonable floor. $15 an hour is not pie in the sky. It's the least a person in Pennsylvania can actually earn to survive. It's a survival wage. So what we need is a floor that allows people to potentially earn more than that. But without that floor, what we're experiencing is, at this moment, destitution, starvation, inability to pay rent. You know, lots of people, you're going to see a lot of people facing homelessness in the next year or two following the pandemic. This is not the type of thing where you shut the economy back on again, like you flip a switch and suddenly everything's okay. It's going to take years to recover from this pandemic. And during that time, we need this huge swath of low-wage workers to be able to consume. So my biggest answer to your colleagues is that you're still talking about 15 million workers across the country who will get a direct wage increase from this minimum wage increase. So when you say, why bother? It's because we can't afford as a nation for 15 million people to be destitute, to not be able to pay their rent, to be living out of their cars, and to not consume.
Yeah. The argument that I get back from them is twofold. One, if we do this, we're going to pay $30 for a hamburger. And two, well, nobody really makes minimum wage because we heavily subsidize them through food stamps, school lunch programs, you know, housing assistance, LIHEAP, you know, all of these social programs that employers have gotten used to training their workforce to go and get so they don't have to pay them real wages. So the argument that I get back, and maybe you can correct it, is that, well, nobody really makes the minimum wage. There are all these other programs that subsidize that.
I guess I would ask any of those people if they would be okay earning so little that they were forced to go apply for public assistance. Nobody wants that. There's nobody who works in America who wants to work full-time and not make enough to make ends meet and therefore has to go apply for public assistance. Getting public assistance is not easy. It is stigmatized. It is not reliable, as so many people found with this pandemic when they couldn't get unemployment insurance. Nobody wants to work full-time and not be valued for their labor and instead have to go apply for public assistance. Nor should we as taxpayers be subsidizing these employers, these corporations, by allowing them to pay so little that we as taxpayers have to subsidize their workers' livelihood through public assistance. That is not a functional society. You know, a few years ago, there was an interview in the New York Times with the guy who runs the Copenhagen airport, where the wage is actually $23 an hour, even for fast food workers. And this was the head of all the fast food restaurants at Copenhagen airport. And they asked him, why do you pay so much? And he said, well, if we didn't, then the workers would rely on public assistance. And that would be the sign of a failed society. And that is what we are. If we expect millions of Americans to work full time and still have to go beg for public assistance from the government and from taxpayers. That is unacceptable. Everybody who works in America wants to be able to be valued for their work and to be put food on their family's tables from the work that they do. They work just as hard as anybody else. Their work is skilled work. They need to be valued for the work that they do.
I'm right there with you. And which is why when the Fight for 15 people, you know, first came out with their 15 they're 15 in a union campaign. I said, you know, that's exactly what we need to be doing. Yes, we're going to fight for $15 an hour. But more importantly for me is getting them that collective bargaining right to be able to fight for better than 15 so that their work is rewarded and respected. And for me, I'm hoping that's part of the Biden plan. Yeah, we're going to get to that $15 an hour, but also give them the ability to join and form unions. So last question I've got for you in looking at, you know, the landscape coming, you know, who are the key players in possibly holding these up? Who should we be humiliating in public and who should we be congratulating for being behind it? And who are we able to move?
So ultimately, this is going to come down to 8 or 9 moderate or conservative Democrats, because very likely the Republicans will vote against the full COVID package, including raising the minimum wage. And that's just so not smart on their part because, you know, as Florida in 2020 demonstrated, this issue of raising the minimum wage is universally popular among both Republican and Democratic voters. For working people, both Republicans who voted for Trump and Democrats who didn't, universally, this is an overwhelmingly popular issue. That's why we saw in Florida, deep red state that voted for Trump, 64% of people voted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour and raise the minimum wage for tipped workers to nearly that, above $13 an hour. So people believe in raising the minimum wage. People do not believe that it will kill the economy or small business. They do not buy that.
Yeah.
And so Republicans will vote against it, and it will be to their detriment. And then it comes down to the moderate Democrats. People like Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema, senators in New Hampshire, and Angus King in Maine. Will these senators go with the Biden administration and pass a full 15 for everybody, including tipped workers, including workers with disabilities, or will they attempt to water it down, to carve workers out, to try to please some business interests by making it less than what the proposal is right now? And we need to encourage all those folks to make sure to stand with workers right now to pass the complete bill, 15 for all.
There you go. Saru, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Saru Jayaraman, the president there of One Fair Wage, onefairwage.com, their website. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.